Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Hey Patrick, didn't you once tell me you co-wrote a screenplay?
That's true, Jim. It was a story about an indie rock band struggling with success, the challenges of the road, and the struggle between getting a real job or making it as a full-time musician.
Oh, I thought it might be something interesting. Okay, Patrick, I want to tell you something real quick here before we get into part two of the interview with Joel Pernice. Which, by the way, thanks for setting that up. I thought it was
absolutely
a delightful conversation. And, I will tell the listeners a little behind-the-scenes thing that happens with some of these interviews. Sometimes, you work on setting it up and there's a bit of a back and forth. And it's sort of like, okay, I got 30 minutes time and I'll give you this time, in this day and this period and all this, blah, 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 blah. And then you get into the interview and you're sort of like... Well, we know we're running out of time here, and the subject would just be like, no, let's keep going.
Oh, let's keep talking. Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
And that's what this interview was like. And that's a good thing, I think, for the listeners, right? Because he was at ease and having fun, and I think we got some good stuff here for the people. So anyway.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say here on Rockin' the Suburbs, I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
What I was going to say is that one of the things about our current, health crisis that means a lot of people are staying at home.
Mm-hmm.
You heard yesterday Joe talking about how it, led him to record the music for this new album called Richard in a very, stripped down solo manner, right?
Right.
For me, I would not have predicted this would happen, but I've been playing my guitar every day lately. And I swear, I have not touched this thing in 20 years, maybe.
Amazing.
I mean, I'm not even kidding you. and I'm playing it every day now, learning new songs and doing stuff. And it's really been, it's really been a joy.
Yep.
And brings, a little bit of, enjoyment to my day.
Mm-hmm,
And, in the sort of the old normal when I just never had time for any of this stuff, and now I just finally have a little more time, and it just it's a worthwhile activity. So for Joe, he's on a whole different level. Obviously, it's wonderful that he's able to funnel that same kind of thing into something where he could record a whole album and put it out there. For me, it's just a little thing. I'm able to just kind of play some songs and enjoy doing it.
And it can be very therapeutic, I think,
yes.
When you do it. It really kind of takes your mind to a different place, which is, it's always nice during these times. So, yeah, I totally agree. And totally agree with what you said about Joe carving out his time. I know he's very busy around the release of this record, and he had played some live streaming stuff. So for him to come on and spend some time, it's great. And in this part, too, as we wrap up the week for Friday, it's going to be appropriate because we get to range a little farther afield, not only getting a little caught up on band activities and other songwriting projects, but to hear the other part of his creative endeavor, which is really cool to hear about.
Oh, totally. So, okay, ready? Let's go into part two of the interview with Joe Pernice, all right?
Get the tape all ready. Let's go.
All right.
The Pernice brothers released a series of records from about 98 to about 2006, or I guess maybe Goodbye Killer, I'm sorry, was the last
2010
one.
10 maybe? Was that 2010?
10, yeah. And then in 2019, you guys came back with Spread the Feeling, and you're still working on a new record, right? Or you were before this lockdown. So what's the status for, for our listeners of the Pernice brothers?
Well, I have every intention to finish the record we started, but I can't do it. That I definitely cannot do alone. So, and I found that I prefer not to send people tracks and have them lay something down. And I'd like to be there when people record things, just because it's fun. and you know, it saves you a lot of trouble. And we'll do it if we have to, but the preference is to bring people in to record or go to where they are. And then, so we're kind of, you know, we're kind of, handcuffed right now. We can't really do anything with it, which is okay by me, because I'm enjoying this direction right now. And, but as soon as things, you know, as soon as we can be around each other without, you know, killing each other, we'll, and I mean that virally, not that I'll strangle somebody or they'll totally strangle me. So that could happen. My brother, God bless him, my brother, who's a few years older than me, I break his balls mercilessly. And he is like, he just smiles, and, you know, he probably, you know, he's in good shape. Could kill me. He just like he popped my head off like he's taken off the top of a soda or something. But he never does. But we have a good time. But anyway, I can't make a Pernice Brothers record alone. And I like to be in the, we like to be around each other when we do it as much as possible. So
yep,
there you go.
Well, that's a great update. Thank you, Joe. And I hope you guys soon get the chance to, you know, be around each other without killing each other. I think that's something we all are hoping for. Now, Jim, I got to shift gears really quick, and forgive me, Joe, but people who listen to this podcast know that I've done many, made many uncool moves in my life. I've made a couple of cool ones, many uncool ones. Now, I got to tell you this, Joe. I met you one time. This was at a club called Iota. I don't know if you remember that place. Yeah, in Arlington, Virginia. May it rest in power. It was probably on, I was trying to think about it earlier today, but I think it was on the Yours, Mine, and Ours tour. So it's like 2003, something like that, 2004, something like that. I know that your 33 and a third book, Meat is Murder, had come out after this, because I had read it, and I went up to Joe Jim and after the set, and I wanted to thank him for a good set, and I was trying to be cool, but I was lighting the wrong end of a cigarette, so I had the cigarette backwards, and you said to me, Joe, you're lighting the wrong end. So that's the only time I previously met Joe Pernice, but I wanted to get that in there.
You should put that on your gravestone. You're lighting the wrong end.
That's right.
I lit the wrong end.
There you go. I lit the wrong end.
Lit the wrong end.
Speaking of that amazing 33 and a third book, Joe, there were rumors that that was going to be turned into a screenplay or a movie. Can you give us any update on that?
Yeah, that's probably dead in the water.
Oh, that's a bummer, man.
My buddy, I became friends with this actor, Neil Huff, who's in The Wire. He's been in a lot of things. And he's one of, now since 2003, one of my closest friends, truly. And we thought about, the reason I met him is because he read my book and thought, let's do something with this, because it really spoke to him. But it didn't get off the ground. It got off the ground, but it didn't stay off the ground too long. And it's probably my fault because, you know, I'm not a big fan of revisiting things like that. You know, like once you write it, what you don't want to do is go back and rewrite it. You know, like I even optioned my last book to a producer up here, and he wanted me to write the script. And I was like, okay, sure, why not? And I was thinking of it probably just for the money, but that I just couldn't do it. I was like, I don't want to look at this again. Oh my God, it's already been written.
I've already been through this birth.
I already went through this. It wasn't even that it was so like painful or anything. It was just boring. I was like, oh my God. If I had wanted to, I thought to myself, if I had really wanted it to be a movie, I would have written it as a script. And I think that's when I realized that, you know, revisit, like adapting my own stuff, it might not be like my dream job.
Yeah, because that's like work. That's not creativity. That's like actual
that's
work,
just
right?
Like, yeah, that's like doing. That's like writing a school paper or something. Right. I don't want to do that. I did all that, but if someone else wanted to write it, I'd be say all the power to you. But but I'm not the guy to do that one. That's for sure. I'm not the guy. Same with my other book. I just can't go back into that swamp.
I'll tell you guys really quick for our listeners, Joe's 33 and a third book is on the Smith's Meat is Murder, but it takes an completely different approach to at least most of the ones I've read anyway, Jim. And I think you agreed when we were talking about that earlier.
Yeah.
It's a great approach. And also you did a little TV writing in 2017, Joe. Is that, you know, since we were talking about that, is that something, you know, you see yourself potentially doing? Like,
yeah, I would do that. I loved it. I have to say that, I was in a writing room up here for a Canadian television show. Mm-hmm. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. It was nice to be creative. And, you know, with music and writing books and stuff, you have to come up with everything. Like, you, if you don't think it, it doesn't happen. But being in a writing room where there was a show that was created and there was already a Bible to it and there was, you know, we broke an arc of a season, but the characters were pretty much there, even though we got to develop them. It was just nice to be creative, but not have to think of every single thing. Like, I was kind of, I jumped in on someone else's baby and was able to do my thing on it. And, you know, it was, it rejuvenated me for sure. And, and it was also really fun. It was just a really fun thing to do. I don't know if I would do it all the time for the rest of my life, but I would take another year and work on a show. I still wrote a good amount of music during that time. I didn't record much, but no, you know what? The day before, I have another record that's done. It's in the can, but I just haven't released it. It's all recorded. And we finished recording it the day before I started working on that TV show.
Really?
In 2000. Yeah, so I've kind of, and the time just hasn't been right to release this other record, if you can believe that. I just sat on it from then. And in fact, I kind of just forgot about it until you mentioned that.
Is it a Joe Pernice record or a Pernice Brothers?
Yeah, oh, wow. It is, but it's with a couple other people that it's with some other people. So,
oh, sweet.
Yeah. So maybe I'll dig up a copy. I'll send you a link to it or something if you want to hear
yeah,
it.
Awesome, that'd be sweet, man. Yeah, we would like to hear that. And since you brought that up, Joe, really quick, the New Mendicants.
Cruel Aneth, we're in love with you. Tell us both what we should do. Cruel Aneth, why is it hard to see? It can't be both, pick him or me. Cruel Aneth, show some kindness, sort it out, make up your mind. Cruel Aneth, how can I love one so cruel? Some resistance in my life, none as strong as the one that keeps you from being my wife. He's my good friend and I know he loves you so. Are you so cruel you won't tell him he must go? Cruel and hell, we're in love with you. Tell us both what we should do. Cruel and hell, why is it hard to see? Can't we both pick him or me? Cruel man, show some kindness, sort it out.
Can you tell us, enlighten all of us a little bit about how that happened and who the people involved with that project were?
Yeah, I've known Norman for a while. I've known him, I met him years ago in England when my band played with him. And it turned out, but we weren't friends. Like, we played a few times and obviously I was a fan and he was a fan, but we weren't super close. And then, I moved to Canada and Norman was married to a Canadian and we ended up living within an hour from each other.
Wow.
And my drummer, Pat Berkley, was actually in Norway recording. He got hired to play on a record of this band called I Was a King from Egersund, Norway. They hired Norman to produce it. And so it came up that Pat, you know, was my drummer, and Norman was like, oh, I live now in Pat said, oh, Joe's in Canada now. Norman's like, oh, I've been gone for a while, but I'll be back. And so he emailed me. Norman said, hey, I saw Pat. I'm back to Canada. I hear you there. So when I come back, do you want to hang out? And I said, yeah. So next thing I know, you know, Norman's in my kitchen in Toronto. We're playing guitars. And I said to him, you want to make a record? And he said, yeah. And we started working on songs that day. We like,
wow.
I didn't even mention making a record till we played. He came over, we goofed around, played songs, and I played him a few songs I had. He played some songs, and you know, I knew we were going to hit it off because I knew I liked him, and I know I like his music, and I think we mine a lot of the same territory. So we hit it off really well. Norman is really also one of my best friends for sure. And so we said, let's make a record. And that's what we did. And wow. We'll make another one. I've just talked to him last week, and when we're going to do that again too.
So, wow. That's amazing. And who else was involved with that project?
And Mike Belitsky from the Sadies. He's right. The drummer in the group, the Sadies. And Mike was my drummer for years. And Mike and my wife were in a band on Sub Pop together called Jail. And that's how I met those two, because when I left the Scud Mountain Boys, their band had kind of split up. And so I met them from playing together. And I said, my wife, who was the bass player in the band Jail, also plays piano. And I needed a piano player and a drummer. And so when my record Overcome by Happiness was coming out, and so that's when we all got together. So that was in 98. So I've known Mike, and Mike lives right around the corner from us in Toronto. So I see him and talk to him. He's one of my oldest friends, great guy. And so that's who was in that band.
Yeah. So check that out, folks. It is available on Spotify and most of your streaming. So if you're curious about another direction, and I'll ask you really quick, Joe, and we had an interview, Jim, right, with the Jayhawks a couple weeks ago, and Gary Lewis said something really interesting about the fact that, we've sort of been called all country and labeled that way and stuff, but really my influences were way more British. And I also wonder what you think about that, Joe. You guys, you know, obviously because of Scud Mountain Boys in Massachusetts, kind of have a little bit of an alt country, are your influences really, different than sort of country?
I'd say my earliest listening influences was American AM radio. My real earliest was probably Jimmy Webb for sure. So I don't really consider Jimmy Webb country music, although like Glenn Campbell made him country music, I guess. Yeah. But he's my earliest influence just as a listener in the Beatles and that kind of stuff. And, some vocal groups like the Brothers Four. I remember loving them as a kid. My parents had that. And I have older sisters who were always listening to AM radio in the 70s. So I got all of that stuff back when the song was the king, right? It was all about the song back then. And so that's what I think that really got me into music. But I didn't start playing music at all until I didn't touch an instrument probably till I was maybe 16. And at that point, it was all British music, or it was REM. REM was a big one for me, but it was the Smiths. It was, I loved Billy Bragg. I loved The Clash. I loved Echo and the Bunnymen. I loved New Order. I loved all that stuff. It was mostly British. I loved Aztec Camera, Lloyd Cole. I loved that stuff. So when I started to play music, my influences were more British than American for sure. And then as time went on, you start expanding your stuff. And then, I didn't really get into Bob Dylan till I was in my 20s. Hmm. It just didn't affect me. It didn't hit me. Yeah. Same with Jimi Hendrix. I was just talking to a friend of mine the other day. I was like, my friend Bill Janovitz from Buffalo Tom. He's like, what's a band you never ran to before? And I never liked Hendrix. It just never happened for me. And then all of a sudden, boom, it just happened. So my influences are really all over the shop.
I can see that. I like what you're saying, though, about, sort of the song was king, because I get that with your music. You really do pay attention to the craftsmanship of the song. Yeah.
This record I just made is probably the most indicative of how I work. Just about every song I've written has been written on an acoustic guitar sitting alone, whether it's the full orchestra, whether it turns out to be a piano ballad, whether it turns out to be a driving rock song. I've written, with the probably exception of 5 songs out of 17 records, I've written on an acoustic guitar. And so I always try to make, at least for me, it might not always come across to everyone else. But for me, I always try to make it work as if I could play it alone. And then everything else is kind of support to it. You know, even on my record, Overcome by Happiness, which has a huge, has a lot of strings on it.
Looking like a fool, drinking like a clown, worried you'd be nobody, not so far from that now. You don't feel so overcome by happiness, you're broke.
Lot of orchestration that all came last as something that was to support the song where it could, rather than, you know, try to hide what I wanted to sign off on the songs before we started. You know, I wanted to feel good about sitting around and playing them alone before we built them up. Do you know what I mean? So I
totally.
I always try to make sure the song is, you know, can hold water.
Does Nick Lowe fit into your influences at all? Because when I listen to this record,
yes,
that I got kind of a Nick Lowe vibe to this new record too.
Older Nick Lowe, though. I haven't, not because I don't like him, just because sometimes I don't think about it. Like today someone said, what do you think of Andrew Bird? And I haven't listened to him in a long time. And I played shows with him. I think he was great. And I was like, oh yeah, you're right. Why haven't I listened to him lately? And it's just because I haven't thought about it. And, right, you know, I guess there are some artists that you might not think about them if you're not listening to them all the time, because it's not like they're in the news or they're on radio or they're
right,
places where I might hear them. So it's just kind of an out of sight, out of mind thing. And Nick Lowe is one of those people for me, not because, and I'm not just saying that so I can say, oh, I really hate Nick Lowe, but I don't want to say anything bad about him. That's not the case at all. I think he's a master. And the last time I think I listened to Nick Lowe, sometime around December, I queued up the song Jumbo Ark. You know that song?
Oh, yeah, I did.
That was the last time I listened to Nick Lowe. It was probably around Christmas time. I remember I listened to that song about 6 or 8 times in a row because I remember loving it. And I was like, holy crap, that's a masterpiece. That's a great song. So yeah, Nick Lowe, but I like I said, it not recently, but
yeah,
he's, now that you remind me, I'm like, you know what? Yeah, I think I probably listened to Hunky Dory enough for a while. Maybe I should cue up Nick Lowe.
Do you do streaming? Do you do Spotify? And
I do sometimes. I try not to, but sometimes I find myself getting streaming things. Yeah, but that's part of the reason also why, especially now in quarantine, it's not like you can go out and buy stuff or even yep, listen to it, you know?
Yep.
But I do tend to go back and listen to a lot of stuff I already have, you know?
Yeah, totally. So,
and it's kind of a bad habit. It's kind of uncool because you don't want to like miss out. I don't mean like fear of missing out. I just mean truly missing out on some good stuff because
you're
stuck in a rut. But also, if I might add,
yeah,
when I'm recording or writing, I don't listen to a lot of music. I tend to put it away just because I get into a head where I'm just working. Like when I made this last record, I'd get up at like 6 in the morning, make a coffee, go down into my basement and work. And then I'm not really thinking about listening to music as like entertainment or I'm not thinking of listening to music as like a discovery of new things. I found myself listening to Fred Neil quite a bit during the making of this record.
Interesting.
And some Tim Hardin too. But I'm the kind of person where I'll get stuck on listening to like, Reason to Believe or what do you call it? It'll Never Happen Again 20 times in a row, right? So over and over and over and over and over, like probably that Dolphins, the what do you call it? Fred Neil Dolphins, or, you know, A Little Bit of Rain. I might have listened to, I don't even know how many times in a row I listened to those songs over and over. So I'm not your typical music listener.
No, it doesn't sound like it. And like when you repeatedly listen, you're just like taking them apart to like see what they did, or you just got an itch that you want that song to scratch until it's like scratched.
That's what it is. Sometimes you can't believe it. I just couldn't believe. You just can't believe how good it is. Like,
yeah.
You know, I could listen to Fred Neil's voice, even if he was just singing gibberish. Like, he could sing the phone book, and I would be like, okay, man, I'm in. Because his voice is just it. And I think I figured, and the same with, like Tim Harden, too, that I could just listen to some of his songs, that just the songs, like Reason to Believe, that song is just, I just can't believe it. I can't get over it. I was like, is that, did someone make that up? That's like, did that magically fall from God's hands? You know
right,
what I mean? Like,
right.
So it's just astounding to me. And it's a feeling, like I just get a really, you know, just, it's overpowering for me. And I think sometimes I enjoy it.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. And just one more thing, Joe, like when you're writing, writing like your novel, Feels So Good When I Stop, and, you know, stuff like that. Are you listening to music when you do that?
No,
not at all, huh?
Probably not much. And I definitely, the last book, I remember when I wrote that book, I did not write any songs for 6 months, probably. I remember I just, because I'm also not great at working on different things at once. Like, I'm not great at shifting gears between, like when I was writing, you know, when I was writing for the television show,
yep.
I wrote a few songs, but not a lot during that time. So I'm not great. When I was writing in that book, that just consumed me all the time. Like, I woke up thinking about it. I woke up talking in the voices of characters. You know, I'd go out to eat with my wife on a date or something, and, you know, it would be like, guess who are in this part of the book? I mean, I must have become, I probably became really, really boring person for sure, more boring than normal. But, and that's not, you know, that, I don't know if I'll write another book or when I will. I'm not sure I enjoyed that headspace for the year, you know, like, I don't know if I enjoyed not having music. Not making music, and I knew I couldn't and do them both, because right. it just takes, for me at least, it took a level of focus that, you know, isn't natural to me. I had to kind of, you know, be really super disciplined about it, you know. Unlike music, where I'm disciplined, but it pays off the minute. Like, even if I don't write anything, just strumming a guitar just works for me. It just feels good, you know, and I enjoy singing, and it's like, it's all payoff. There's no work, even when it is work. But writing a book took a lot of kind of focus that I don't know if I'm made for.
Yeah.
You know who I got into, who I hadn't listened to in probably 25 years, and I hadn't listened to a lot then, but I, Pentangle. Did you ever listen to Pentangle?
Yeah, British folk, man. Some great stuff.
Oh, my God. Bert Jansch is just, holy Christ, is that guy something else? And you know what?
That stuff is great.
And you know what really blew my mind is how much Stereolab sometimes reminds me of Pentangle.
Really?
Like, holy smokes.
That's interesting.
Check out a song called Wedding Dress by Pentangle. And I was like, am I listening to the Emperor Tomato Ketchup here? And, you know, and I'm not saying they ripped them off. I'm saying they were probably mining the same territory.
Yeah, they probably were. No one's Stereolab, sure.
Yeah. But there are some Pentangle stuff that is just, if you can get beyond it being like, you know, lutes and, or like twee British, whatever, which it really isn't. It's, but it kind of is seen as, you know, like someone running around in armor and shit like that.
But, yeah, like your girlfriend took you to the medieval festival.
Exactly.
And you're like, I do not want to go to this.
I'll pour myself a big jug of mead and listen to Pentangle. It's not like that at all, man.
But I'll ask you this, Joe. As far as like writing hit singles, have you ever had the urge to say, like, man, I've written some great stuff, like Working Girls, for our listeners, you know, should have been a top 10 hit in many, many countries. But have you ever said to yourself, Joe, I'm going to sit down and say, I'm going to write Afternoon Delight, or I'm going to write, you know, Chevy Van or something like that?
Every time.
Every time.
See, you can only write what you can write. No, I don't know. Like sometimes I write music. I think I write songs that I would like to hear. Like I'm really, it's self-centered in that way. Like, I write songs that I think I would like, and that's what I go for. And I don't even know what a hit is. And I'm not kidding. And that's not saying I'm not being smart or being funny. I don't even know. Like, I don't even know what a hit song is. Like, you know, people decide what the hit is, not me, you know? So I don't really know. And it's been so long since like music that I make goes anywhere near radio, right, or it gets pushed in a mainstream thing. Like, and I just don't even think about that anymore. I made this record and I'm talking to you guys and I'll do a certain amount of promotion and stuff like that. I'm on to the next thing already. Like, I really am. Like, the songs for me, I'll listen to my own record when I'm recording. I'll listen to it endlessly until it's finished mastered. And when it's finished mastered, then it goes off to the plant. Then I'll listen to it a few more times and then I'll get a test pressing and I'll listen to it a few more times. Then I won't probably ever listen to it again, maybe a few times. Like, you know, I have records. When I say I have records, all of my records I haven't listened to in years. Every once in a while, years. I mean, Scud Mountain Boys, years. Last time I listened to Scud Mountain Boys, 2014, because we went on a tour and I had to relearn some songs. Right. I have not listened to Overcome by Happiness in 10 years.
Wow.
I have not listened to any of those records in that long. I have not listened to whatever, name it. I just don't listen to it. Because for me, and I've said this a bunch of times, and it really is true, the real pleasure, the only pleasure, is in the making of the thing. It's in the making of the record. It's in recording with my friends, recording alone. That's when all of the magic happens. In the songwriting, all the pleasure is in the making of the song, the recording of the song. After that, it's somebody else's, and I don't even think about it. Sometimes when people say, wow, that song really meant a lot to me, I'm taken aback, not because I don't believe it's not true, but then it's like, I never thought, like when you said a perfect song, Cigarette Sandwich, I laughed. You heard me when you said that. Or like, because that in a million years would never have occurred to me. Never have occurred to me. Hmm. Because I just don't even think of those songs anymore. They're not mine anymore. They're someone else's. Do you know what I mean? Because for me, the engagement with it is over. I engaged and now I'm done. And now I want to keep making more.
Yeah.
So, you know. So that's, you know, I've said it. I've also made that analogy. I'm like that lab rat who gets the little bit of cocaine every time he presses the button. Do you know what I mean? And that's what songwriting is for me. It's like pressing that button. And that's all I want to do is press the button. Like, as much as I enjoy playing live. Are you guys still there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, because my son just phoned me, but I didn't want to get cut off.
Oh, okay.
I enjoy playing live, but to me, it's not where the most magic of it, meaningful engagement. It really is sitting alone at my kitchen table, or in my basement, or in my little room, or you know, scribbling something in my car. That's where where I'm like, I'm onto something, and, you know, and that's really what it is.
Sometimes it's better not to know. Holding on to something when you should just let go. True words spoken in a dream. Swimming to the surface like a last breath, last scream. Push, pull, hurry up and start. Would you give a little if you can't give it all? 10 years picking at a seat, trying to wake the kid, messing up my wet dream. Hey kid, rock and roll, what's on your soul? I wish I had knew sure simple way to reach you. I'd be the king if I could say to you, cut the baby.
Thank you.
So there it is. How about that, Jim?
I really loved it.
Yeah, to hear about Joe's writing, especially. You know, like we mentioned, if you haven't had a chance to read that Meet His Murder 33 and a Third book, that's one of the very best in the series. And I understand after doing some research, it's also one of the best-selling ones. It continues to move copies. It's a very different approach. He takes a fictional approach to the whole thing, and cool that there was an idea for a screenplay. It's a bummer that it didn't pan out, and maybe it will one day. But and his novel also is fantastic. And also, how cool is it to write for a TV show?
I know.
That's pretty amazing. Yeah.
I know. You know, it's funny when he was talking about like sort of the idea of like the writer's room and all that kind of stuff. As a writer myself, I've always thought like, God, that would be really interesting to write for a TV show. But I don't know. I think I'd have a really hard time. I'm not so good with that sort of like pressure of like, to me, it would be like sort of feeling pressure of wanting to, you know, not let anyone else down or sort of live up to some kind of expectation and everything and I would just want to retreat into my own like little closet and just write myself and not be part of a more collaborative enterprise. I think I would fold under that sort of atmosphere. But anyway, I'm impressed by people who can do it.
I know, and it seems incredibly intimidating. I think of that movie they made about the Doug Kenny who founded National Lampoon, you know, where they're all insulting each other in the writing sessions. And,
right.
Like picking in everyone's weaknesses. Like I would crumble in 10 seconds. I mean, you and I get nervous writing intros for this podcast.
But Joe sort of found it to be the opposite way. I guess the idea that
that
you don't have to carry it all on yourself can be somehow, you know, freeing in some way. So but that's a whole other thing. That would be a different podcast that we'll do about the writing process. That's something else
we're gonna do. Well, Joe's excited and seemed to really enjoy it. So maybe we'll have a chance to have him on again sometime. I think that would be really cool. It's neat to kind of get to know him and introduce him a little more formally to our community. So if you don't know his work, definitely you've got a whole rich back catalog to check out. There's a lot of goodies you can find out about Joe.
Very much so. And also the new album is called Richard. And we would encourage people to check that out because it really does feel like a record for these times. And so I think it will appeal to a lot of people and they'll, you know, really get something out of it, that listening experience.
Totally. And scurry on over to Bandcamp. And, you know, there may be a few copies of the vinyl left. As you heard Joe mention, it doesn't ship until a couple weeks from now. But, you know, you may be able to save yourself a copy if you get over there and check it out. I know they did a small amount, but still great to have this.
All right, cool. So, again, our thanks to Joe Pernice. And as Patrick just, you know, intimated, if you want to come on anytime and just talk.
Absolutely.
You know. Visit with Joe, we can make that happen. So let's stay in touch.
Let's do it.
All right. Also, if anyone would like to comment on these episodes or any of our episodes, you can call and leave a message. The number is
612-440-1984.
Or you can email rock@suburbspod.com, or you can hit us up on the Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram @suburbspod. All right. Anything else?
No, I think that's it. Again, thanks to Joe, and hope you guys enjoyed it, and ready to head into next week.
Let's get out of here. Big things planned for next week. I just don't know what they are right now. No, I think it's going to be new music episodes. I think we got to hit those up. Yeah. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
We'll talk to you guys later.
Pull a string and I wink at you. I'm your puppet. I'll do funny things if you want me to. I'm your puppet. I'm yours to have and to hold. Darling, you got full control of your puppet. Pull another string and I kiss your lips. I'm your puppet.
Luckily, I never have to hug anyone ever again. Fantastic.